You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. When the heat of the flames tries to overtake you, what will you do? In Those Who Wish Me Dead, Angelina Jolie plays Hannah, a burnt-out flame jumper who is struggling to deal with the traumatic events of her past. When she meets young Connor, she finds herself forced into the fire again as she attempts to help him get to safety. This week, Victor Stiff from Dope Black Movies and filmmaker Ryan Kayett drop by to talk about Taylor Sheridan's unique style and what it means to find beauty in the fire. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
That's fair. I'll you do podcasts as well, Victor?
I'm a guest on one, but I just started doing a video series, so I have to speak to the camera, and it's not something I always love doing, but I've enjoyed the process so far.
Nice.
Yeah, Vic does a lot of writing for, well, you're primarily at That Shelf, right?
So yeah, I freelance everywhere.
You freelance everywhere, though. Yeah. He's Mr. Everything.
That's cool.
All right, perfect. Let's get started. Let's do this. Welcome, everyone, to Screenfish Radio. I am so excited for you to join us this week. We have a very special week with a couple of people that, well, we have one new face and a veteran of the podcast. I'm so excited to welcome back Victor Stiff from That Shelf and everywhere else.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you can join us. And Ryan Kayett, local filmmaker. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
Glad you could join us. This week, we are talking about Those Who Wish Me Dead, which is the latest film by Taylor Sheridan and is available on HBO Max and or if you're in Canada, available for rent on various platforms. The film stars Angelina Jolie, Nicholas Holt, and John Bernthal, and tells the story of a woman named Hannah, who is a smoke jumper, she's purchased a watchtower. That's very impressive. And tells the story of Hannah, a smoke jumper who's perched in a watchtower high above the Montana wilderness. She soon encounters Connor, a young boy who's been bloodied, traumatized, and on the run in a remote forest. And as she tries to bring him to safety, she's unaware of the real dangers to follow. Two relentless killers hunting Connor, and a fiery blaze that's consuming everything in its path. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers. Just in case you have not seen the film yet, all bets are off in the conversation. But for gentlemen, I would love to know what you thought of Those Who Wish Me Dead.
I think if you go to the film's Rotten Tomato page, it tells you everything you need to know about the movie. It has like a 60% approval rating by professional critics, but it has an over 80% audience score. So it's a movie like it's not a critic's dream movie. It takes a lot of shortcuts, but it's also like really fun if you just turn your brain off and enjoy it.
Yeah, that I went into it completely blind. So I really like Taylor Sheridan's work, and I was like, I'm just going to not going to consume anything prior. And I kind of feel like overall, I like the film. It's entertaining, you know, really great actors into some cool set pieces. But I feel like probably with the way the critics looked at it is like, it almost, they were expecting maybe more because Taylor Sheridan has been kind of progressively getting better and better. And it's, you know, his work is really engaging and interesting, and it kind of falls short of just reaching that next tier. And maybe that way there's kind of a little bit of disappointment with that, but overall I'm on the board with just thinking it's like a very entertaining, exciting film, and just, you know, some really, really cool set pieces. I'm sure we'll talk about that. Just as a filmmaker, I was just in awe.
Yeah. I'm on board with you guys here. I found it really enjoyable, surprising, not surprisingly so, because I've really enjoyed Sheridan's work before. It is more fun than it is about incredible depth, if there's a way to put it. I thought visually it was gorgeous. I thought it was really well done that way. And I actually thought that the writing, I find that Sheridan is most effective when he writes less and shows more, if that makes any sense at all. I think that, or sets it up. Like I think back to Sicario. And did he direct Sicario? I don't know.
No, that was
Villeneuve. He wrote it, right?
Yeah.
But I remember being totally blown away by Sicario. And it was just sort of these moments that were set up in the scene. And it's strange. The thing I remember the most is the finale and the giant water bottle that was brought in for the torture scene. And then you don't see anything. But for some reason, that really resonated with me. I was like, you know, you could make the argument saying, well, what's the point of that? But the scene was so well constructed that I thought, man, this is good storytelling. I don't need all of that. And I thought that really came into play with Those Who Wish Me Dead, in that I found it visually was really solid. But it didn't require, I also thought it moved well. Like it didn't try to become over bloated, which it could have. But
yeah, I completely agree. Like, I think one of Taylor's strengths is the fact that he can, you know, really get a lot out in really small lines, like just, you know, really short sentences, especially if you look back at his the previous writing works. And there was definitely some of that in this one. There was a lot of parts where I felt almost a little confused with like the way the exposition was kind of coming out, not confused in terms of the film, but just like surprised that Taylor was making a few of these choices. And then when the credits roll, and I realized it was based on a book, it kind of just clicked for me. I was like, they're taking a source material. There's a lot in it, I'm sure. And they're trying to condense into a film. And there was probably, you know, just maybe the choices there and trying to figure out what to condense and what to make fit was probably a difficult task, especially with, you know, the talent of cast they have. And so I think that was the one where the things that was confusing me about, you know, seeing this film compared to his previous works made a lot more sense when I realized that it was based on a book and they had to adapt it.
Yeah. I think the fun of Sheridan's work is that he makes modern day Westerns and neo-noirs, and he works with these really fun archetypes. So it's these very big American flag waving macho movies with manly men and ruthless killers and rebels working outside the law. And like, we've seen those characters a million times, and that's part of the pleasure of his film. So when these people step onto the screen, boom, we immediately know who they are. He doesn't really have to spin his wheels, like getting us familiar with them. Like, we're on board with it, and you just get in the car and the tires screech and, you know, you're heading down the highway. Minute two. Mm-hmm.
The settings he usually has too, like, you know, with Sicario or Hell or High Water, like it felt authentic. Like, you know, when you're in those movies, like you feel like they, you know, that this is actually kind of a real slice of what's there, obviously heightened. And obviously, like, again, like you're saying with the action aspect and the manly men, but there's something authentic about that kind of cities in America. And with Wind River as well, it has that aspect. This one, it felt like just more of an action film, right? It didn't have necessarily that, like, this is the world they're living in. It's very much like, kind of like a throwback to like those 90s action films, right? There's like the bad people are coming after the good people, and you have like the little chase and, you know, the conspiracy, the CIA, or I mean, we don't know who really the villains are, but that kind of big government or evil government conspiracy coming at them. And that was kind of fun. It's just, you know, in a world of our, you know, current movies where it's just superheroes, it's like really nice to get something like this. That's, you know, talented actors and, you know, a big story, and you're just kind of along for the ride.
Yeah, I mean, we used to get these mid-budget thrillers a lot in the 80s and 90s, and they disappeared. And what's really funny here is now if you want to see this kind of story, they're going to HBO and Netflix and Amazon. Directors are switching over there, and Sheridan actually has one of the most successful television shows going. Like, he's taken all these themes, and he's put them on his TV show, which is, the name is escaping me.
Yellowstone,
yeah. Is him. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so it's like he gets to hone his chops telling these stories on the small screen, and then, you know, he saves all his big ideas and all he gets those reps in, and then he goes and does something even more amazing in the big screen.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about the archetypes and stuff. One of the things that I both loved and hated about this film is that they hint at such a large world and they keep it so small. And in some ways that's a real plus, because it just says, look, this is the story I want to tell. This is the people that matter. This is the moment that matters. But like Tyler Perry he shows up, says some things, and then he's gone. We don't know his name. We don't know where he's from. We just know they're the bad guys. And there are all these things going on, and you're like, oh, that's, and even the fact that we never find out the MacGuffin. The MacGuffin is a MacGuffin in and of itself. And I both loved and hated that.
Yeah, I mean, the mystery is always more intriguing than the reality, right? It's like, would Jaws be so great if we saw so much of the shark? It's like, again, these archetypes are so broad. We've seen a million movies with, like, you know, corrupt, crooked spies. Like, even Captain America, the Winter Soldier, you know, like, Robert Redford, he's supposed to be, he's taking, like, America's defense agency shield, and he's really, it's terrible, you know, it's the bad guys, right? Like, we've seen it so many times, even Marvel movies are doing it, so they don't really have to give us the nitty-gritty details of, you know, what they're hiding. We just know, yeah, government bad, you know, rural American big-hearted cowboys good.
Yeah, but then on that note, I did feel like there was a little bit of a, like, they needed to reveal a little something, because there was never a point where it was like, you know, it was almost like too conspiracy theory, where it's like, who's the bad guy? Because at the end of the film, when there's the, is it the FBI that pulls up, or there's some government, you know, big group pulls up, and then the media pulls up. And there's like this feeling where you're like, okay, now they're in trouble. Because they first showed like the CIA or whatever, yeah, the government officials pulled it up. But because they didn't kind of instill really what the issue is, like why they're chasing them or who the enemy is, there wasn't a really kind of, it was more confusion than curiosity, you know, like there was a little bit of missing there. With I think the one thing with Tyler Perry coming in, it very much felt like, okay, well, we need another name to build up our budget. We'll put him in for a scene, because that whole scene could have been taken away and nothing would have been lost out of the film. And I'm a big fan of Tyler Perry. When he was, you know, when he was one of the cast members, you saw that he was going to be in it. I was like, okay, this is like, what an all-star cast. He's in there for like maybe a minute and then gone. And there was a few things like that where it was like, I don't know if it was a matter of them just trying to cram so much stuff from the book into the film. And as a result, like kind of losing something, like losing, like it would have been almost more interesting, I think, if they really kind of honed in on one, like, really, like, what's the main focus of this film? And right now, it was almost like four or five subplots as a film. You know what I mean? Like, it was hard to know, like, the way they were doing it, like, with Hannah, Angelina Jolie's character. Like, was she they made it like she was the main character. But if you watch the film, if, you know, she just feels like another subplot. It almost feels like there was all these subplots mixed in, and I didn't kind of get that sense of like, we really know where this train is going.
Well, I would say the hitmen aren't the real bad guy of the film. They're the antagonist, but the real bad guy is the fire. Yeah. And the real bad guy is the PTSD. And by the end of the movie, it's like, that's what must be overcome for the hero to win, right? It's like the bad guys, they weren't even in the climax of the film. Like, the big heartfelt moment isn't them dying, it's her surviving the fire and saving a boy. Mm-hmm. So I think like that is more of a B plot, even though it's flashier and it's easier to think of this crazy, like, on the run hitman movie. It's really about a woman overcoming her trauma.
No, I hear what you're saying. Actually, this is what I mean. I go back and forth on this because I felt like the film focusing on the moment was so important. I think the idea of the fire and the trauma and the PTSD, like that to me was the overarching theme. And if you start, you could easily lose yourself in the conspiracy or all the little MacGuffin things that could be completely lost rather than keep it on that character journey that Hannah is on throughout the film. But when you finish the film and you go back, there still is that taste in your mouth of like, I would have liked to have known something.
or I agree that like the way that definitely was probably the main thing, right? Like her facing her traumas and trying to overcome saving a child after witnessing the three children die in the fire. But in terms of the, like, that's kind of my point. Like,
yeah,
it didn't seem like they chose and ran with that one. It seemed like they were really focusing. There was so much with the other stuff. And, you know, there's this kind of thing where sometimes it's hard because you know so much. And, you know, there's like a, you know, really, really interesting, like visually interesting scene where she has to, they run through the field with the lightning striking, right? But there's a point, and I'm not sure this, you know, this would be the right or wrong choice, but I'm saying there's a point where you have to start looking at those and being like, is this helping our film or is this just adding something, right? Like what can we do to really hone in? And when I finished the film, I think that was my main criticism of it, where I was like, it just felt like they didn't really latch onto something. Like the idea that it's her facing their demons it's there, but is it there because we know it's like supposed to be there, or we can, you know, kind of see when there's so much other stuff going on that if we were to kind of start pushing those away and start looking more deeply into that stuff, I felt like I feel like there's like a really, really good film inside this fun watch. You know what I mean? Like there's something in there, and I'm not sure if it's, you know, part of the adaptation process or maybe looking into it too much, but there was definitely a few times where I was kind of left confused or like, just like not understanding, you know, why the characters, what the character motivations were. But at the same time, if you just maybe I'm thinking about it too much, if I just flip those off and just go for the ride.
I see what you're saying. Like, I think Jolie's character arc worked in the film, but I think like this is a really brief movie. It's like 100 minutes, right? So it's probably like 90 without the credits. And I think like just that emotional arc between her and the boy happens so fast, it doesn't feel earned. And because it doesn't feel earned, it's less substantial. So you feel like something's missing. So I think it's there on paper. It's just not particularly deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that point. I have to say, and I don't want to juke away from this because I think this is a great conversation, but the women in this film, I think, are some of the stronger women that he's written that I've seen so far. Now, I haven't seen Yellowstone and seen that long form with him. I think I've only seen the first episode. But I thought that Jolie, first of all, it was just really nice to see Jolie. And Medina Senghor, I think, is the other one, as well as is Allison. But I mean, first of all, it was really nice to see Jolie in it was almost throwback Jolie. It was like late 90s, early 2000s Jolie we got in this film in a little bit. Even the fact that she threw herself off the back of the car in that opening scene with the parachute, which I wish I'd seen more of, like cool stuff like that. But it was sort of like, I remember you.
She doesn't make a lot of movies these days. That's the thing.
She's done a lot in the last 10 years. They've all been kids stuff.
Yeah.
It's all been voiceovers and kids stuff. So, I mean, is this sort of, hey, remember me because the Avengers are coming out or whatever it is, the next...
The Eternals,
Eternals is coming out in November, maybe.
But it's strange because, like, I'm a bit of an insane person in that after I watch a movie, I read at least 5 reviews and I go back over all the criticism. And it seemed like the only thing most critics were talking about was the miscasting of Jolie. And it's like a lot of people couldn't get into the film because they didn't buy her as this gritty... blue collar, rough around the edges person. It's like, you know, she's very attractive, but you know, if you can't turn your brain off to that, like we dismiss things in movies all the time when we enjoy the movie, right? It's like, if you want to sit there and nitpick at it, you can find why that doesn't work. But I thought she was great in it. I bought her jumping off the tower and like burning her hands on the rope. When she ran through the field with the lightning strikes, like in my notes, I just wrote lightning strikes. Yeah. Like, I don't understand the issue around it. So I'm glad to hear that you love seeing her in this film and it didn't distract you from it.
She does. Like, honestly, it made me want to watch Gone in 60 Seconds again. Like, I was like, she brought back those vibes for me and it was just nice. And even for a while there, she was doing some of those films, but she was trying to skew more dramatic, and she was doing stuff like The Changeling and stuff like that. And more the Oscar fare. It's just nice to see.
I would say like people's criticism, I think it really just falls, like if they think that she's too attractive to be in that role, I mean, that's such a, like a superficial way to look at it. It kind of like, it falls really flat. I do say like, she did a great job. She's amazing in this. And I complete like your point to the fact, like when she's doing those things, when it's the parachute jumping off the tower, completely believable. I would say it's nothing to do with her performance. You could switch any other great performer in that role. I don't know if the role had enough meat on it. So if there's a criticism of the performance, I think that's way off. You can say maybe the role needed to be, you know, developed a bit more. And that could be fair, but she did great in it. In fairness, like the entire cast is amazing. Like there's so many, like when you're watching, you know, some pop up, like John Bernthal, it's like just such a pleasure. Every time he's on screen, you're just like, yes, please more. Like he's just such a great, he has such a great face for it. Like, you know, such an interesting character, but he's always, you know, he walks that line of being like super strong. And also like, you can just completely see him as that, you know, that sensitive husband sitting on the couch with his pregnant wife and just, you know, he's in it. Nicholas Holt is everything he's in, I just find it's like so engaging. You know, Finn Little, like this, like top to bottom, this this cast is great. And I can't really, if someone has any problems with the performance, I think they're, I don't know what film they're watching, because it can't be this one, because they're really knocked out of the park. The one thing I want to say on the cast, we'll get back to Julia, I apologize, I'm going off, but the sheriff in it, who I never know his name, he's only in it for a small part, and his part probably wasn't even needed, but Boots Sutherland, I guess I looked it up after, he has the most perfect sheriff face in all of film. It's like anytime he's on, because he was in Sicario as well, and he's like in a bunch of other ones, he just looks like that Texas sheriff. He talks like it. He just, everything about him is so perfect. So anytime he's on screen, I wonder if, I don't know if this is true, I feel like someone in the editing room was like, you know, we don't necessarily need this scene, but there's no way you can cut him out, because he's just such a pleasure when he's on camera.
Yeah, yeah, he's really great. Now, I will say, I think Medina Senghor, if I'm saying her name right, I think she steals the movie for me, though. Even as much as I love Jolie, I thought she was incredible. And I've never seen her in anything before. And I was looking at her IMDb page. She has, I mean, she's worked before, obviously, but I mean, she just kills it. Like from start to finish, she is so fierce.
Yeah, that scene with the bear spray is pretty badass.
Oh my gosh.
And even with her when the Connor is coming at her, when it's like the final confrontation between the two, and she's, you know, she's runs out of bullets, right? So she's, you know, she's has to reload. My first thought was like, okay, well, her husband's going to come, because he's like, the only thing they have is an axe. Remember, like they made that line when he's in the tower. I'm like, he's going to come and do it. And the fact that she got her way out of it, I was like, just so pleased, because the easiest out would have been having him come save the day. And the fact that she was able to reload and get herself out of it was such a great touch, because it was such an easy option to go the other way. And they made a really good choice with that.
And especially since her character is like 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, what was, there was a, there was a horror
six months.
Yeah. But there's a horror movie at TIFF. A few, was it Prevenge or something like that?
Yeah. Alice Munro.
Yeah. Alice Munro. And I'm like, you don't get to see many films about, usually, you know, you don't get me about, sorry, let me rephrase this. You don't often get to see a character who is pregnant, who is portrayed as strongly as you do in a film like that you do here in that sense. Like,
no, not unless she's playing a real jerk, you know, it's like, yeah, a Momzilla kind of vibes.
Yeah. But she like, honestly, anytime I love that, Ryan, you talked about the whole cast, because I think there wasn't a weak link in the whole cast. Personally, I didn't think there was really a weak link. I even bought Nicholas Holt, and I like Nicholas Holt. He's fine, but I haven't seen him in a lot where he's really stretched. But this one, I was like, is he gonna? He's not gonna be able to keep up with Aidan Gillen and all this stuff. They're not gonna be able. And I bought him in that role, and even at the end, and they're. I wanted to call it the steel cage of fire, because it just reminded me of like the old wrestling days where they had like this steel cage all over, it's just flames.
Again, visual, gorgeous visual.
That's one thing I actually like. I really highlighted as a plus in this. I mean, fire effects seem to be something that's filmmakers have just gotten so good at implementing, right? But this level is incredible. Like the fact that, in that fight scene at the end, where it really was like breathtaking, the fact that you had the ashes falling had almost like a snow effect, right? And then the fire coming is more like, it was more like a snowfall in hell with the fire approaching, yeah. Right? But the colors were like just visually stunning. Coupled with that, it was really, really like, I can't think of an action film that had like that level. Like there was almost like a very, sorry, of recent years, but like almost had like a, almost like a, almost like poetic, where it was such a stunning thing to watch as it was unfolding. I was all in on that. I was just amazing. And the fire effects overall were just really well done at that scale.
Yeah. I mean, it really was visual poetry. Cause if you think about it, what does fire do? It cleanses and it purges. And then with the ash coming down like snow, it's also a new beginning. So it's like emotionally, visually representing what Jolie's character is going through emotionally. It's pretty clever.
Yeah, I like that. Because the fire is its own thing in this film. You know, it's both antagonist and help is not the wrong word, but almost hope. But in that final scene, because you're right in that the fire establishes a new beginning for her. Like you said, the idea of purging, I thought was really, really effective. And it's not just fire bad. I mean, we know that fire is bad and they're running from it the whole time. But this was where I was going to go with it before. There was a line that I thought was really interesting and I wanted to throw it to you guys and see what you thought about it. Because this whole film, Hannah is running from the flames. And then at the very final scene, she's talking with one of the other firefighters, one of her coworkers. And she says to him, I stared it right in the eye and it looked beautiful. And it just made me think of this idea of staring. I think she talked about staring the fire in the eye. And I was wondering what you felt that meant to the story and what that means to you.
I think it could mean accepting our own fragility, knowing that life is not given, that we're not in control of our fate, that, these greater forces can come and just drastically change, like the ground can shift from beneath us. And I think it's coming to peace with that is kind of can torment you, but it also makes you understand that if you can work in tandem with it, you're stronger than you think you are. You can grow and be challenged and just appreciate what you have, knowing that it can be taken away.
I'd probably be with the kid, whereas like, I think his line after that, he goes, I didn't find it beautiful. I mean, he swears, but he goes, I didn't find it beautiful at all. Right. And, he goes like, and I think there's with his writing, I also like that where anytime there is something that's really dramatic or deep, he kind of has a good way of taking it out a bit where, so it doesn't become, cause it's a great line. He has quite a few of those. And then there's something afterwards that drops it a bit or adds a little bit of a humor so it doesn't get too heavy handed. And that was one line, like that line I really loved and I really appreciated that it was like, he was able to put that out, but then also have, someone kind of take it down a bit where there's, there's like the thematic version of it. And then there's like the practical reality of what fire is doing. And there was another part with that when they're at the campfire, bonding over the campfire. The son, there's like, it's kind of like a little bit of an exposition dump where he's talking about, how his mom passed away. And her response is like, oh, I can't even feel bad around you. Like, it's like, it's such a great way of like getting this information out there, getting these feelings and, how they're having to, how they're moving forward and trying to, find their way in their life. But at the same time, let's take it down a notch and just have a quick laugh about it. Cause those things really help move, those characters forward and the story forward.
Yeah. Without going full Marvel. I love what you're saying and yes, it does, but it doesn't, the Marvel does it in every 10 minutes of their films. So it's,
yeah.
You know what? Even the fact that you mentioned it there with them sitting around the campfire, I'd forgotten about that scene. And that to me, like I think a moment like that takes the fire and it's like, it can draw you together as well as rip you apart. You know, there's sort of like they're sitting around there and it's contained. They have it in front of them.
Fire destroys, but it also illuminates.
Yeah.
And she was joking about how, like, if he learns how to, you know, to build a fire, how he could get the girl. Right. And there's, that's, you know, right. That, you know, how it can bring people together and stuff. So
that's true. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny when I think about that final blaze, the one of the things I keep thinking of too is ghosts, not in general, but like, I mean, like, cause the flames that she was chasing to contained that memory of the three kids. Obviously it's not literally the same fire. I'm not being ridiculous here, but anytime she saw those flames, it reminded her of that moment of her life. And there had to be sort of for her this almost I feel like there's almost an ownership that takes place when they get into the river and she just sort of lets it burn. Like, cause she's at peace with that moment, not just because she's rescued a child. So I've rescued one. So it's not like I rescued one. So it balanced out the death of the three. Like, I don't think it's that simple, but I feel like in that moment, it just sort of reminds her that the fire, when the fire moves over them, it sort of allows her that moment to let go of that in a way that I think, you know, it's almost a releasing of those ghosts as well. Like, I think, and I love that you guys already talked about using the ash in the way that it does. It feels eerily flesh, or not flesh, eerily fresh. When they
kind of like a baptism in the water, right? A rebirth, being purged of the sins of her past.
Yeah. It's interesting. I hadn't even thought of that, but yeah, you're right. Like when they come up and everything is new, like it's almost peaceful.
Yeah, everything's blue. It goes from red to blue.
Yeah, yeah.
See, there's also there's also the thing where she said earlier, and this, I mean, this goes to what we were saying before, but when she was recounting like how she should have gone through the fire to rescue to those three boys, and they're like, there's no point. Like, you would have died as well. But it's almost like she doesn't, it's not rational, but that's what her instinct was, to try and do that. And in the same way with, you know, now with Connor, it's like she has that same thing where it's like she's gone, now she went through the fire to rescue this child. And it's like she was able to go through that, even though, I mean, in this situation, they didn't really have a choice. Their hand was forced, but at the same time, she was able to do that. So you're right. It wasn't just the fact that, you know, she was able to save a child, and that's not the same thing, but it was the fact that she had to go through the fire to do it. That really gives it that full circle.
You know, and this goes circles back to the stuff we were talking about before. I think this is a great example of Sheridan showing the story as opposed to telling it. Like there are exposition dumps and there are moments in the scenes, but the film clicks along fast enough. That these are the things I think that really communicate the character arcs is the visual moments. We see characters grow and change and well, really it's mostly her. I don't know if the other characters really, the other characters are sort of placeholders in terms of character arcs, but with her, it happens all almost visually. And I really appreciate that about his filmmaking.
Yeah,
I totally agree with you. Nothing to add to that statement.
It's fair.
I do think that's. But if you look at his previous writings, now, I mean, when Taylor when he wrote Sicario, like I went back and I a while ago and I read the original script, and there was definitely way more like action, you know, action dialogue and that kind of hero mentality versus the finished project when Dennis obviously toned that down and was way more subdued, but he had those inklings. But I would say that I do feel like there was more characters that were really fleshed out and you had more of those arcs, and not just the main one, but the different supporting characters. Same with Hell or High Water. Like, you really understood who these characters were. You understood the motivations. And I kind of feel like, and I mean, this is some post after I watched it, I went and looked up, you know, just the, you know, some internet research, but I saw that he was brought on it to help rewrite it. So it was originally adapted by, I forget the name.
This film?
This film, yeah. He was brought on to help rewrite it. And then he wanted to direct it as well. And the reason he was able to direct it is he said, if I can get Angelina Jolie to do it, will you let me direct? And so they said, of course, but there's no way that's happening. So fast forward and now he directed it. But I kind of wonder if this was like more of his original story, or if there was something where he wasn't beholden to previous drafts or the novel, if those other characters would have been fleshed out a bit more. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, again, kind of where I feel like this film just doesn't hit that next level. And then with his past work and his skill level, it definitely could have. And it's, you know, again, it's still a really entertaining film, but I feel like that's where we're kind of missing out on. We're seeing where those, why these characters are doing it, what's pushing them forward.
Yeah. If he's coming in to rework the script, then it's different. Then it would be different than if it was his own original story. Cause I think Hell or High Water and Sicario were his original stories, were they not? Like, they weren't based.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not that he's a great visual choice. Maybe he's a master of editing. Maybe that's what I like. I haven't figured it out yet.
He's really good at the stories, like those core stories, right? Like, you know, even this one, but just finding the stories that kind of people can gravitate towards and then adding a level of depth to them, which is, I think the films that kind of action type films that are able to last longer and resonate with us for a longer period, they have those levels to them where there's just something, there's a core subject matter, the theme, something that kind of connects us to that world they're living in. Like, think about like Hell or High Water, you know, it's two brothers robbing banks. But the fact that it's like, it's also based around a financial, you know, the financial crisis and people who are suffering, it lasts a little bit longer. There's something more to it, right? And that's, you know, I think that's what takes an action film and makes it able to get nominated for an Oscar, which, you know, which that one was. There's just something, another layer to it. And he has that ability. Like, he can see those stories, which is why I'm such a fan of his work. He's able to see the depth and the stuff that connects us.
Well, guys, before we screen it or skip it, I figure I'll ask this. Any predictions on what it was? What was the MacGuffin? Any theories?
I would say he has all the release dates for the next phase of Marvel movies, and he knows when they're going to introduce the X-Men.
Well, that's better than mine.
that's assassination worthy. Yeah, I can see Disney getting a couple of hitmen to go after that, but not enough to do the dual hits at the same time. Just enough budget so they have to travel and get the next one. I assumed it was like a level of, because it was the what's the financial, what was the accountant, the forensic accountant. Mm-hmm. So I was just thinking that it was probably something to do with like the president, and maybe they decided to skip out on it because they were like, this is hitting too close to like a political statement we don't want to make. But I wonder, I don't know if you guys, have you guys looked into the novel at all after? Like, I,
no, not at all.
So I wonder if maybe that was something in the novel that they never revealed as well.
That's true. That would be interesting to know. I just assumed it was the formula for time travel. That's what I thought it was, is that that he finally cracked it. He finally cracked it. But, you know, if Warner Brothers got their hands on the release dates for phase four of the Avengers or the Marvel Universe, yeah, you're right. That's I'd send Tyler Perry in after him.
As Madea.
As Madea.
Undercover.
That was a whole layer of the script that they didn't really let out, but he was playing Madea, playing someone else.
I honestly thought that he was going to pop out at the end and that they were going to have to go for another round. I thought there'd be more, because it was like, you know, everything's nice and calm. They're at the back. I just pictured him popping out of one of those SUVs, pulling up or something. And it's like, oh, this isn't over yet. And it was over. So I was a little bit fooled there, but I was just like, they're not bringing Tyler Perry in for 1 minute of screen time. There's more to this. Nope.
Well, I really wondered if it was one of those things where it's like, now again, it's based on a book, so I don't know if there is or not, but it felt like there was a movie waiting for a follow-up. Like it really did feel the world was so big, focused on this one thing, that if they went and told a story over here, it wouldn't feel too jarring. But I mean, I don't need a sequel. I'm not asking for one, but I felt like they could, if they wanted to.
Yeah, they could have spun that off into a story just about the hitmen, mm-hmm. or just about, you know, Bernthal. Like they could have went in a lot of different directions. I guess that's what you get when you cast so well.
Yeah. It definitely feels like it's almost like they needed to go all in and make it like a bigger, like a mini series, or, you know, I feel like they could have really condensed their storyline. They still would have been able to fill a feature length and just really focus in on something and go and run with that. They kind of went in the middle, and I feel like that's what kind of stops it from being like a tier above, but it was, you know, still very enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. Maybe the Blu-ray extras will have those secrets on it.
Well, sign me up.
Do they still make those? No.
5 years from now, we'll get the director's cut. It'll be like the full version, 4 hours.
Black and white, four by three aspect ratio.
That's right.
Yeah. Only the fire will be in color. That'll be.
That's it. That's the Logan treatment. You're going there, my friend. That's where you're going, full Logan or Mad Max.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fun, guys. We should screen it or skip it. Those who wish me dead, screen it or skip it.
Absolutely screen it.
Yeah, for sure. Screen it.
Yeah, I think it's worth it. I'm not sure. Well, I mean, again, if you were not watching it by yourself, the $25 rental price right now, if you're not watching it, if you're watching it on HBO Max, like, If you're in the U.S. and you're listening to this, watch it today. Like, absolutely. For those of us that have to pay $25, if you're watching it with, you know, two or three people, sure. But
here's my pitch on that. If you're a fan of like original films and this type of films, like these types of films,
yeah,
you know, maybe you just pay the $25. It's, you know. Maybe you'll be like slightly disappointed you didn't wait 6 months for when it's on Crave or whatever, but these are the type of films that, you know, we need to keep supporting so we can see more of, because there's a lot of great filmmakers that can really make some really interesting stuff. And if you're a fan of those types of films and really, you know, interesting filmmakers and you know, incredible cast and talent, it's worth
it. Yeah, you got to speak with your wallet and support the cause. If you're complaining that there's too many Marvel movies in cinemas, you have to show up for these kind of films, and you got to go on social media, share it, spread the word with family and friends, and make sure the film gets some traction. And that's how you'll get more dope original movies from people like Tyler Sheridan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it it really is just sort of refreshing. Like, it's, you know, there's a film with a great cast. It's a half decent budget, fun storytelling, you know, and really engaging, that wasn't made by Marvel or Netflix.
This would actually be a really fun one. If theaters are open and someone's safe to go, this would have been a fun one to watch in the theater. Yes. Like those fire sequences would have been just breathtaking in the theater. Just, you know, completely absorbed. It would have been amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That would it would have looked beautiful on something bigger than my flat screen, for sure.
And it would have sounded terrifying in surround sound.
That's a great point. That's a really great point. Actually, the overall, just a really quick note on it, I found the score to be spot on. I thought it was a really great score.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. The music and the score worked really, really well, I thought, in this particular film. Guys, thanks so much. Appreciate it. I love having you on. I really appreciate it. Anything you guys want to plug? I know that, Vic, you got stuff on YouTube.
Yeah. Dope Black Movies. I just released one on David Oyelowo's The Waterman. I have one coming up for one of my favorite all-time feel-good movies, Dave Chappelle's Block Party. That should be up in about the next 10 days.
Awesome. Awesome. So they can find that on YouTube. That's great. Ryan, what do you have anything online that people can find?
Yeah, you can see my work at riverlife.ca. So I have Riverlife Productions. That's like my creative stuff. And then I do a bunch of corporate filmmaking. So that's at kgcreativemedia.com. So
awesome. Great. Well, guys, I really appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much. For you at home, a reminder, you can find us wherever podcasts are available. And if you go to screenfish.net and go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More. Questions that you can get the conversation started about the film with people that you watch it with as well, help get things moving that way. We will be back next week. But guys, again, I just want to thank you so much. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.